hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool. Hey, Jonathan, it's kind of a big deal this month. And this, not this episode necessarily, but this month. I was putting on this shirt for those of you on the YouTubes. Like,
that's all right.
And our shirt says established 2018. So this is 3 years of podcasting excellence. I mean, it's been amazing. It's been kind of tough to deal with all the fame, but you know, it's been fun.
Let's get some applause.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get the 3 year mark. You need a little applause.
Yeah.
2018.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
It seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Today is episode 231. That's 231 episodes. Crazy.
Wow. Was there a world before 2020? Like, I didn't, it's weird. Didn't know that.
Apparently so.
But we got a good show today. I'm excited. We got a guest coming on.
That's right.
It's already.
You want to tease our topic today?
I do. So first of all, I was thinking about this topic because this weekend is Halloween.
Right.
So everybody, you know, every email that you get has a scary pun. You know, a terrifying pun in it, in the subject line. I wrote my own today as well for a client. But I was reminded that copywriter, world-renowned copywriter Eugene Schwartz, who we've gone through his book on this show, he once said that every copywriter should go watch whatever the top box office hits are on a regular basis.
Ah,
he said there's always something to learn from whatever's popular. And today, what's more popular than ever is horror movies. Very nice. Look at you queued up. Tech is working overtime today.
That's right. I pay him a little extra today.
So check this out. Statistic from Charter, C-H-A-T-R, I think it's .co. Mm-hmm. And they have the best like graphs. You can get their weekly email and it'll send you all these cool graphs. Great for, you know, content and just dropping random facts that, you know, when you're building rapport or whatever. So here's one that was recent. It said spooky season, horror movies are proving resilient in the pandemic and box office numbers. It's now 18%
wow.
of the box office market share, up from everything else. Now, some of that is probably due to other movies not being as successful.
Sure, right.
But still, that's a pretty big jump.
That's huge.
People aren't going to the box office, but they are still going to watch things like A Quiet Place,
yeah,
Part 2, Candyman, Halloween Kills, The Conjuring, mm-hmm. all those kind of things. So it's big business. And we're going to be talking with our guest about one of the biggest franchises, I think, in horror movie history, and maybe we can figure out like what's going on and why horror movies are so popular and what we can learn.
Oh yeah.
So that's the idea of the show anyway.
We'll
see if it pans out.
Yeah. It should be interesting. We'll get into, our guest has actually written a book on one of the most famous horror films of all times. So, wow. I mean, I can remember going to see this movie when it first, the very original one, when it first came out. Now, I'm going to tell you, it was pretty, I think I was like a junior, senior in college going to see that thing, man. It was kind of creepy. And I went with some friends, man. And I'm not ashamed to say I was on the edge of my seat a little bit.
Yeah. It's funny though. I was thinking about that too. Like, I saw a lot more horror movies when I was younger than I do now. Like, they're just not as appealing to me now. So I'm curious if there's something to that, or if I've just gotten kind of grumpy in my old age or what, I don't know. So we'll find all these things out.
Yep.
And I'll wait for our guest, but you know, he's not alone. There's another very famous, cause our guest is also a marketer.
Yep, exactly.
So that's why he made the cut on the show. Mm-hmm. So, but there's another very famous copywriter who was into horror films, and we'll reveal that.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember you mentioned that. So I can't wait to get into,
we'll save into that.
We'll save that
a little bit later in the show. So,
all right.
Does our guest have a beverage?
I think he does.
He does.
He does. I see him in the green room holding a can of some sort. Well, so
I guess we should welcome him in to,
all right,
to the ceremony.
So we have, is it Padraic? Padraic?
You can call it, it's Patrick. It's,
oh, that's a cool way to say it.
I always say my parents were a little drunk when they named me and just threw extra letters in there.
Okay.
That's a unique way to pronounce Patrick, but I like it. And so it's, is it Maroni?
Yeah, it's super Irish.
Yep.
I'm based in Leprechaun.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to call you, I'm still going to call you Padraic because that's even cooler. Do it. All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So Patrick is the author of a book we're going to be touching on today. We're going to be talking about, he's obviously spent some time in this franchise. And the book I was referencing, the first one that I went to see was Scream, the original Scream, but he's got a book out called It All Began with a Scream. So a big fan, I'm sure, of the franchise, and we're going to get into that, but we're also going to be touching, as Sean said, why is it that we love these scary movies? Why is it we love these horror films, and why we love to be scared? So Patrick is also a marketer, so we're going to be discussing that from a marketing perspective too. I'm sure we're going to get into how marketers can use that.
How do we scare people?
That's right.
Welcome,
Patrick. You held up a can of some sort, so I'm assuming you've got a beverage.
I've got a Red Bull. It's like 5 o'clock. Why not?
Yeah. You're going to be winding up. We're going to be winding down.
That's right.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Whatever works for you. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, why did you choose Red Bull? Because we always ask our guests why they bring what they bring. What's your, you got a thing with Red Bull, or is it just every once in a while? Is it like a daily go-to?
I'm actually trying to get a paid sponsorship from Red Bull. I don't drink coffee. I'm very particular about what type of beer I drink. And I'm actually doing a marathon next week, so I'm trying not to drink right now. So Red Bull it is.
Wow, marathon. That's no joke.
Yeah.
Keeping in tune with the theme, it's terrifying. Yeah.
Well done. Good pun. All right. Well, we're going to go into our beverages. Jonathan, what do you have over there?
All right. So I've got a single that I picked up today. It's a Boysberry. The Brewery Bakery is the name of it, but it is a boysenberry pie. You ever had a boysenberry pie, Sean?
I have not.
You ever had a boysenberry?
I don't think so. I certainly haven't had it in my beer. So I'm worried for you. I'm concerned. This does sound terrifying.
It does. It sounds interesting. It's a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout with boysenberries, cinnamon, and natural vanilla flavor.
It should have been booberries.
Booberry. So I was curious because I've never had a boysenberry. Patrick, have you ever had a boysenberry?
I didn't know they were a real thing. I thought it was just something people make up. So no.
No, there is a boysenberry berry, and it's like I had to look this up. It says boysenberries look like blackberries, but are actually a cross between blackberries, loganberries, and raspberries. So to my understanding, it's like a blackberry, but it's a little more tart in flavor, which I wouldn't care for. So I don't know why I got this.
Me either, but hey.
I'm kind of disappointed now, but let's see. I'm going to read. It says, slice into the bold barrel-aged imperial fruited stout and experience a slice of Southern California in your glass. Inspired by Orange County's richest history of growing boysenberries, this barrel-aged imperial fruited stout is full-bodied with big, bold berry flavors that are drizzled with rich vanilla flavor and a hint of cinnamon. 10.2% ABV. So wow. That's why I got it.
Yeah.
I just kind of looked past the boysenberries.
Yeah. Well, I will, I'll share mine here. So I have got one we've had on before. And it is the Black Chocolate Stout. You remember this label, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah, Christmas. I do.
It's kind of a Christmas look that we talked about before.
Yep.
So this is the world famous Russian Imperial Stout. Regal and refined. Yeah. Like, look at all that cool copy there and colors and all that stuff. It's very, like, I love the labeling and the packaging on this stuff. Like, it looks high end. But it's a black chocolate stout. It's a seasonal limited release type thing, but it's 10% alcohol and dark chocolate and hints of espresso.
So
that is what I'm having.
Here's the question today. Do you remember what you gave it before?
I do not remember the exact score, but hey, points don't matter.
That's right. It doesn't.
It's like, whose line is it anyway?
Yeah.
Points don't matter.
That's right. Every day is a new day. So
yes,
it doesn't matter what it rated then. It matters what it rates now.
Right. You know, I mean, you know, because it's all relative, right? It's relative to other stuff you've had. So we've had some pretty bad beer since I've had this one.
That's right.
So it makes it a higher rating.
Do you, outside of caffeine, do you not drink alcohol at all? Or is there a particular one when you do drink that you gravitate towards?
No, I do when I'm not training to kill myself. usually, you know, IPAs or I'm a vodka boy. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you don't drink while you work out? Because, I mean, Sean and I do.
Well, if I'm at the gym, I have, you know, the beer helmet.
Oh, I see. Just
not with running.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. You might spill it.
That's right. That's exactly. Good.
You got to pull the finish line. At the finish exactly. Line is when you just start chugging.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's Jonathan and I were both in the Army, so we were taught to drink and exercise at the same time. That's just part of the culture.
That's right.
Smart.
Or used smart. To be. It's probably not allowed anymore. I don't
know. Nope. All right, Sean, let's see yours. Check that out. Look at that beauty. Oh, look at that. See what you're missing, Patrick? Man. That's
too many monitors glaring over here.
Awful timing for this race. Awful timing for this race.
I would think any time is an awful time to run a marathon, but that's just my personal opinion. Right. But hey, good on you for doing it, man.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
To everyone.
Yep.
Cheers.
Even to you, Red Bull drinker. Oh, man. All right.
I like it.
All right. So we give a rating, Patrick, on our beverage. You are more than welcome to give your Red Bull a rating. We give it a 1 to 5 pints. In your case, it would be a can.
I mean, it's standard. It's not a flavored one. So I'll give it the five cans.
Wow.
Five cans.
For the result, I guess, right? Not for the flavor. Yeah. For what? Because it gives you wings. That's what I've heard. It gives you wings.
Red Bull gives you wings.
By the end, I'm just going to be floating. So
that'll be cool to watch. All right.
It's a special for the viewers. Like
Jonathan, what do you give yours? Your boysenberry punch over there.
Boysenberry, I tell you, there's a lesson here. Do not mix tart berries with a good bourbon barrel stout. Or is it? Yeah, this is ale. A stout.
Ale, right?
No, imperial it's an imperial. Ale. It's an imperial stout. So
okay.
Those two should never, ever be in the same room together.
You would think we would learn, but
yes.
We keep trying these new beers. But
I know. And people keep trying to make them. And
I know.
So I'm going to give this one a, this is disappointing. I'm going to give it a 2.9, unfortunately, for them.
It's not too bad. It's not awful. We've had worse.
No,
we
have.
Pine Sol beer.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to give this a 4.75.
Oh, wow.
Right up there. Yeah,
it's man, good. That's really you're good teetering stuff. Close. You know, that's so close. We can't give it an applause. What can we give it? We can give it a... Oh, my stupid thing didn't go off. Come on. Technical failure. Well, we'll just give it an applause.
muffled applause. All right, I like it.
I had my Halloween laugh queued up, but it didn't go off. Stupid technology. Wow.
It went off the first time. That was perfect. So that was good. So
your home could.
No, that's an ad. So we don't want that one. So.
All right.
All right, well, Patrick, the stage is yours. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am from Philadelphia, originally from upstate New York, and I just wrote a book. I've been in marketing for about 8 years. I'm at a nonprofit, and I'm doing a marathon. I said that already. I'm not really sure what else.
So what spurred you to write a book like this? I mean, this is kind of unusual.
Well, we're in unusual times, Jonathan.
Yeah. Sure. Why not? Actually,
it was the pandemic. You know, working at home, I needed something to do. I live alone, so I had 24 hours to fill. I took up drumming, which my neighbors love. So, this year's the 25th anniversary of Scream. So it just seemed like it was a good time, and I figured if all of us were trapped at home, that the actors and filmmakers might also and want to talk to me. So that's what I did. I figured I would reach out to them, and luckily they were willing to talk to me.
That's cool. So you actually got to interview some of the filmmakers. Was this the original? I mean, I'm not sure. I don't even know. There's been so many Screams. Which ones and how many they've had over the years? But
so there's been four that have come out. A fifth one is being released in January. Mm-hmm. The book covers all four of the movies. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to people from all of them. Some of the actors like Jamie Kennedy, Skeet Ulrich, the voice of Ghostface, Rose McGowan, Rory Culkin, and behind the scenes, a bunch of the producers, Patrick Lussier, who was the editor on the first three, and then is now a director in his own right, and just really took all the interviews together and pieced together the story with all their experiences to give readers an inside look at what it took to make these movies that people still love 25 years later.
Yeah. So I got to ask Patrick, was this just a ploy to get to try to talk to Courtney Cox? Is that the real thing going on here? Or Neve Campbell, either one?
I mean, the ploy failed. I didn't get to speak to those two. I have met Neve Campbell. She's really, really sweet. But I mean, it's never a bad afternoon when you get to just talk to an actor for an hour or something. Just hang out with Rose McGowan on Zoom for an hour.
Yeah, it's cool. We did that last week with a guest. This is our second Hollywood-ish kind of show in a week.
Yeah,
and we might be on to a new trend here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
we got a new trajectory.
I tell you. So Patrick, I don't know. So what, tell me a little bit about your marketing background. Like, what do you do? You said you work for a nonprofit, but what's kind of your role? Are you just marketing director? Like how'd you get into that world?
Yeah. So I actually started as a writer, when I was in high school professionally and when I graduated college, I went the publishing route, and that was, I graduated in 2005, so social media was just kind of starting to take over our world, and I kind of realized that was more the route that I wanted to go, and I started to kind of segue from editorial into social media, and then from social media, I went just completely into marketing. So I'm now, so I moved out of publishing and I'm at a nonprofit in Philadelphia here, the American College of Physicians, which is a member-based organization. And I am basically in charge of marketing one of the product that we have. It's a $60 million every 3 year program that we market to internists to help make sure that they stay certified and have the latest information and board prep stuff for them.
Yeah, those are great. Those membership type mm-hmm. nonprofits, those are great, actually pretty cool business models. I mean, you could actually make them for profit too, but I think they have a little more credibility when they're nonprofit.
Yeah.
Somebody's getting paid.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if you know this, Patrick, but one of my favorite copywriters, direct response copywriters, the author of this book, On the Art of Writing Copy, Herschel Gordon Lewis. Do you recognize that name, Patrick?
I do not.
So he is considered the godfather of gore. So in his part time, he made gore, like some of the goriest movies back in the day. He died in 2016 at 90 years old. So his career spans, started in 1951, and his last one was 2000. I think it was released after his death, 2017. But he did. He was like, they call him the godfather of gore because he pushed boundaries in the horror genre with blood and guts and everything else, unlike anybody else up until that point. So a little trivia for you.
What's the name of that book, Sean, that he's got?
On the Art of Writing Copy. He's got dozens of books, but that's probably my favorite. He was most well known for like being a catalog copywriter. Mm-hmm. He wrote a lot of short copy, but he's really smart. He was a narrator for a lot of his movies. So he's got that Vincent Price kind of voice.
Mm-hmm.
Same nice. Kind of gravelly, deep, voice. He sounds almost just like Vincent Price.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool that, I think a lot of us marketers and writers and that kind of stuff, we get into all kinds of other stuff like drumming or, we always have most writers and marketers I know have these other hobbies. So it's interesting that you have that too. So that's cool. Marketing. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what you learned writing this book and like, why are horror movies in general just so dang popular? They don't have to be that good.
Yeah, right.
That's actually one of the funny things is that horror movies are kind of seen as these Teflon genre that the movies can be made super cheap and are some of the most profitable in Hollywood because people will still go see them. And kind of what you guys were touching on at the beginning of the show, that the horror movies are doing well now when some of the other movies aren't. I think that's because people are looking for escapism. And so Candyman and A Quiet Place, it gives people that chance to kind of escape what is, quote unquote, scaring them in the real world. And it gives them that release because that's really when we go to a horror movie, we're looking to get a release of our anxiety. And we talked a little bit about this off camera about, being scared, it releases endorphins in you. So it's you're basically getting a high from it. And they actually came out with a study, I think, within the last year that going to see a scary movie or a horror movie is you end up burning like 150, 200 calories in those 90 minutes. So really you can go to the movies instead of going to the gym once a week.
I like it.
I wouldn't recommend it all the time to replace your workouts, but every once in a while.
maybe instead of putting ESPN on the TVs in the gym, they should put horror movies.
Absolutely.
On the TVs in
I was
the
just
gym.
Thinking that.
That'd be
hitting the bench, hitting the treadmill while you're watching a little Jason Voorhees.
Who knows? It's interesting you say that about, I was doing some research on this for this show, and I think the most famous probably cases of these are the Blair Witch Project as far as being cheap to produce and then making a lot of money, and then Paranormal Activity specifically. I think it cost $15,000 or $10,000 to make, and it made $100 million at the box office. That's a pretty good. I mean, that's almost as good as Bitcoin. Almost.
I mean, I wouldn't be upset with that ROI.
Yeah, I mean, that's not
well, bad. Blair Witch, I think it was like $5,000 was their total budget or something like that, you know.
Yeah,
people just taking a camera out.
Yeah. I mean, even Halloween was super cheap to produce, and until Blair Witch was considered the most profitable indie movie because of how much it's made over the years, and then Blair Witch came along and decimated it.
Blair Witch looks like it did $250 million.
Unbelievable. Talk about ROI.
We have to talk about like the Blair Witch, some marketing, and I mean, talk about marketing and persuasion. The fact that, just a little story. I was writing for the local paper at the time. I reviewed it. The screener I got was missing one of the interviews in it that explained about standing in the corner. So I wrote this review being like, the ending makes no sense. It's so dumb. Like, this movie's awful. People wrote in saying that, how could I be so callous that these were real people, that I should go stand in the corner? Like people were so convinced from the marketing campaign about this movie that it was genius, and it would not have made anywhere near as much money without that kind of trickery. But it's insane. Like, so that's one of the best marketing campaigns I've seen for a movie.
So explain that, because I vaguely remember that at the end where you catch the camera angle or to stand in the corner. What is that? Because I didn't know.
So I haven't watched it because, you know, I'm scarred from people trying to wish death on me.
That's bizarre.
From what I remember, it was like the Blair Witch has someone stand in the corner, facing the corner, while they kill someone else, or while they, it's something about if someone's standing in the corner, they're about to die or something.
Okay.
It's something along those lines. And they explain it with one of the interviews with the townspeople earlier in the movie, but my screener didn't have that.
Okay.
And so people just like, and mind you, at the time I was like 16, maybe 17, and I'm getting these angry letters telling me I should go stand in the corner and wait for the Blair Witch, because I'm not sympathetic enough to these fictitional people who died.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting about that is, first of all, this was made in 99. I would not have guessed it's that old. So it's pre, you know, Instagram videos, Facebook videos, even YouTube was not huge in 99.
Right.
I don't even know if it was around, I think, but maybe not. I don't know.
It was.
Cause that was pre.com crash.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that looked like that felt more, not everybody had a video camera in their pocket at that point, right? We didn't have an iPhone with the cameras and all that stuff. So it could definitely feel a lot more real. Like, I don't think you could pull that off today, the marketing of it, the way you could back then. So that's interesting. You said the stand in the corner. So this is, I noticed that like all these horror movies, now that I think about it, are a lot of them, especially the really popular ones. In copy, we have this thing called a mechanism. It's like the thing that makes your product kind of work or makes the promotion work. They just call it a mechanism. And it seems like a lot of these horror movies have that kind of thing, right? So stand in a corner, say Candyman in the mirror. Like, you know, they have Beetlejuice, which is not really a horror movie, but, you know, say his name a couple times. Or there's a certain thing you do that triggers you're next, you know? And I think that's interesting because it helps the, cause I'm just thinking about this. Like I hadn't noticed that really before, but that is a common theme, I think, in a lot of horror films. Have you thought of that or noticed that?
Yeah. I mean, I think with a lot of horror movies, they'll do that to kind of as foreshadowing. they'll use the mechanism as foreshadowing of what's to come, to kind of try to build up that anticipation for the payoff that you're going to get.
Right. I mean, like The Quiet Place, you know, you make a sound, here comes a creepy fast, like the Jimmy Johns guy, you know, he's like coming after you as soon as you make a sound. Scary fast. Jimmy John should have, now that I think about it, Jimmy John should have,
they should have used that. Yeah, absolutely.
As soon as your tummy rumbles, like as soon as you have a little bit of hunger, like the Jimmy John's guy comes. They could do a little,
that'd be perfect.
Quiet Place.
Yep.
I'm going to make a call. One more. All right. So far, just talking kind of about this, we've got one escapism and two kind of having this mechanism that, you know, we can come back to later in the show about, you know, how you could use some of this stuff in marketing. So escape it. I'm taking notes as we go, and we're making these points up as we go, Patrick. That's how we do it on the show.
Yep.
So escapism and a mechanism of some kind. So tell us, like, what else did you learn about Scream and what made it successful and horror in general?
Well, I think one of the things that makes horror is, you know, one relatability, you know, and really having something that, along with the mechanism, you know, a catchphrase or something that just really jumps out to the viewer, along with the relatability of, you know, like in copywriting, you know, always saying, this deal is for you rather than we have a deal. You know, if they can have a character that, and I talk about this in the book, you know, Drew Barrymore was originally supposed to play Sydney Prescott in Scream, but she then decided to have the opening death, which ended up catapulting the movie. But if Drew Barrymore had been Sydney Prescott instead of Nev Campbell, it may have taken the audience out of the movie a little bit, because no one's necessarily going to think that they're Drew Barrymore. You know, whereas Nev Campbell wasn't known as much at the time. So, and the rest of the cast wasn't known. So you can be like, oh, I'm like that one. I'm like that one.
Yeah.
And so it kind of plays into that old copywriting, idea too.
Well, that's a great point, because it is true that a lot of horror movies, at least the first in a series, the characters, the actors are pretty much unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
So you think that's on purpose? Or it's also probably part of the budget, I would think.
Yeah, I'm sure that plays a big, huge part of it.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So the relatability by actually not, it gives you the freedom, I guess, to craft your own character story, as opposed to them bringing all their past movie baggage with them. Like Tom Cruise in the horror movies. Kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
But that is interesting, because Drew Barrymore, she's pretty popular at that time in terms of as an actress, and, you know, to kill her off at the beginning, common? I mean, you don't see that very often. Hook,
though, because it would be totally like, star is getting killed off?
Right.
Like, now where's this going?
Exactly. Surprise.
And that was the thought behind it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, this is going to surprise the audience and throw them off kilter, that if you're killing the biggest name in the cast, you know, because even Friends had just really started, so Courtney Cox wasn't super known. So if you're killing Drew Barrymore in the first 15 minutes, then
you're thinking anybody, right? There's no, everybody's game at that point.
Exactly. And it hadn't been done really since Janet Leigh and Psycho. And of course, after Scream did it, then you had horror movies where a big name person was in the first 5 minutes, and then you had all the unknown people, you know, as they tried to kind of review the formula. But before Drew Barrymore, and it was Drew Barrymore's idea, but until that point, it really hadn't been done as a teen movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I say that's just brilliant on Drew Barrymore's part too?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, her agent's like, here's a big check and you're in the movie for one scene.
That's it. That's all it takes. Done.
Thank you. Let me know when it comes out.
Yeah. And plus, not only that, but when people talk about the movie Scream, what's the first thing they talk about? Mm-hmm. Drew Barrymore scene.
Yeah.
So work for a week instead of 3 months, and everyone's going to remember you the most.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she probably, I think that was the trailer they ran, right? I mean, that was a big clip that they you can find all over YouTube, is a scene with Drew Barrymore, even though she's only got like a minute or two, you know, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's literally 12 minutes of the movie, and that's the thing that everyone has.
Yep,
cool. I was actually at an event last night. I was doing an event and a book signing, and there were people dressed up as her at the event, and not even because they knew the book signing was happening. They just, that's their costume for the year.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That's so cool. Where was the book signing at?
It was a fundraiser. Yeah. I'm on a committee for in Philly here, and mm-hmm. we had it at, there's this big theater called the Kimmel Center. Mm-hmm. And so we had it there, and, it was just a networking happy hour, mm-hmm. and I just had a table there because it was Halloween themed, and we told everyone to come in costumes.
That's so awesome. That's cool.
It was fun.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Patrick, but I was doing some, like, you know, top horror movies. I know there's probably 10 million lists online, but one that I found from Empire Online, it put Scream at number 3 out of 50 of the top 50. So the only, what do you think the two ahead of it were?
Is this for scariest? Because I know a lot of people consider The Exorcist to be the scariest.
Mm-hmm. So this that's is one I would the put. Category is just best horror movies.
Best horror movie.
So title 50 best horror movies.
Okay.
So overall, like,
you're not talking about the whole franchise. You're talking about one single movie.
Right.
Okay.
So what do you think the two ahead of it were?
I would say Exorcist and Halloween.
I would think the Exorcist. I'm not sure about Halloween, but I was, oh, look at that.
Alien was number 2.
Wow.
Which is weird, because I don't think of that as a horror movie, but I guess
it is. Sci-fi.
You know what? In my mind, Aliens, the second one, was scarier than the first.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Aliens in middle school and thinking, like, I had nightmares after that movie.
Yeah. So the scariest.
Yeah.
Are the best. Not necessarily the scariest, but the best was the Shining 1980 version. I actually thought the next version, that's the one I remember seeing first. I didn't see this one first. I saw the other Shining first.
Right.
And I know that thing freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I don't remember when the second one came out, probably late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was, that one freaked me out. I still don't like watching that movie. So,
That's interesting. So, I'm just curious, because I would have thought The Exorcist was ranking right up there. Where does that rank?
Halloween is like 5.
Man,
there's some crazy. This stuff goes way back. I mean, they got Jaws in here as a horror movie.
If they have Sharknado on that list, I'm gonna be it's totally out the window.
But you also have to think of the, like, timing makes a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we were saying, and that's true in marketing as well. A campaign that works in 99 may not work in 2021.
That's true. Right?
So Blair Witch works in 99. Does it work today? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe not. Probably not. Jaws in 1975, that was, I mean, to this day, people won't go swim in the ocean because of this movie. That's how much like real life fear it instills in people. And like Shark Week is still a thing because of Jaws, mm-hmm. even though now they're trying to spin Shark Week the other way to where it's more, these are why sharks are good, because everybody's been killing sharks.
So there it is.
Number 9.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah, that was freaky too. I think I remember seeing reruns of that probably when HBO first came out back in our day, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
I think we like watched that without permission on HBO at my buddy's house when HBO was new. So I won't say what else we watched.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, this is a great list. It's classic. List. And I was looking through some of these I've never heard of. So, Stephen King's got to make the
Notice, yeah, Stephen King's got, he's got his list in there, doesn't he?
He's got a few of them, yeah. And he hates most of the movies that get created.
Sure,
too,
so. Yeah.
Because as any good writer would, mm-hmm. right? So,
yep.
All right, so we've talked about, like, escapism. We've talked about, like, mechanisms and catchphrases, relatability. What else, Patrick? Keep dropping some bombs, man. Good stuff. No pressure.
I know. I've exhausted my list that I came with. I think those are kind of the main crux of it is, you know, and just, you know, going back to the, you know, adrenaline release, you know, and it's kind of the same with like going to a haunted house, you know, as you're going through, you're screaming, you're, you know, scared. And then by the end, you're laughing. So I think it's something like that. There's that fine line between, you know, laughter and peeing your pants.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. I remember last year during COVID when almost no movies were being, you know, you didn't see many movies out there, but there was that movie with Russell Crowe, Unhinged, which is kind of a thriller movie. Mm-hmm. Normally, I don't grab it. You know, I'm just like, yeah, I'll watch it when it comes out on Netflix or whatever. I'll catch it. But I really, you know, nothing was going on, so I intentionally wanted to go see that movie when it came out, just to have that, you know, stress release. It was just kind of like one of those movies that were, you know, with all the pent up stress, you know, of COVID and everything, people staying at home, people saying, you know, everything locked down, you know, for a few weeks there. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go see this.
Yeah, I didn't see it in theater, but I saw it on TV. It reminded me of, what was the Michael Douglas one? Falling Down?
Oh, yeah.
It was basically a remake of that.
Except it was a little more thriller-esque.
Intense.
Yeah, it was more intense. A little more scarier because he played a really sinister character in that movie.
And I think, especially with all like the anger online and in the world right now, like you feel like even more than like when Falling Down came out, again, timing, right? Timing's huge. It's like, ooh, that could happen.
Right.
Like road rage is a much more real thing now than it was whenever Falling Down came out.
And Falling Down, I feel like you could relate. I think you could relate to that character more than you could relate to the Russell Crowe character in Unhinged because he was like really out there, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas all of us can put ourselves in the situation with Michael Douglas, you know, you're at the, you're at the fast food restaurant, you know, and it's after 11:30 and you don't get breakfast. You know, how many people have been in that situation or 10:30 or whatever it is.
But also, why do they stop having breakfast so early?
Exactly.
Like, seriously,
that's right.
See right there, you're like, yes.
Yep.
Like in Big Daddy, Adam Sandler does the same thing. It's like, why? Like, this is a question that we need the restaurants to answer for us. And that would probably make people a lot less angry in the world. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, breakfast food is good.
That's like, right.
It's comfort food.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
then you don't get in road rage incidents.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Jonathan, last week, my wife, who's actually from your neck of the woods, Patrick, she's from Pennsylvania, Central PA. Yeah.
Okay.
And Jonathan and I are from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So last week, my wife made me, for the first time, she made me biscuits and gravy.
Ooh.
Like real Southern biscuits and gravy. She had to look up all the recipes and all that kind of stuff because she's never had that growing up, you know. Mm-hmm. And we had it for dinner because it was so good. Because that's
You
know, breakfast for dinner's awesome.
It is. You know? Especially during the winter months, that's even better. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's just you gotta do that.
Yeah, because it's
fall and winter, colder months.
We had a cold front come through. I mean, it got down to 60 here. Mm-hmm. Man, just freezing out here in Texas. Actually, it is going to get down to like 49. Like, we're done. Like, parkas come out tonight.
But so, Sean, has she introduced you to pork roll, though, being from Pennsylvania? Or like Scrapple?
I mean, Scrapple, she's not a fan of. she's more a fan of like the confectionery side, whoopie pies, moon pie, all the Amish, because she was from Central PA, so it's a lot of Dutch and Amish country. So like every time we go up there, there's all the sweets and all this stuff, you know. But yeah, her dad's a Scrapple fan. you know, where we grew up, I would have probably more spam or potted meat, you know, when you go fishing. I don't know, Jonathan, if you did that hunting and fishing, you'd have the potted meat or the Vienna sausages. And we're way off topic now.
Yeah. I stopped eating Vienna sausage after third grade. So I got plenty of those in my lunchbox and I'm like, no, I'm never eating those again. So
talk about terrifying and mystery. No telling what's in there.
So Patrick, I want to kind of twist gears here. So I want to talk about from a marketing angle, because I love what you've done here from, I always call it like riding the coattails of like, you know, something that's popular. So, you know, you write a book about, you know, XYZ, or you have a podcast based on, you know, a popular, you know, I've known people that have done podcast shows on the show Lost, you know, several seasons of Lost, you know, and they would do, and they were like, their traffic would just go through the roof just because, you know, it's something that people want to talk about. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, obviously you picked Scream for a reason, you know, and I'm sure that that was a book, or that's a movie that's, you know, one of your favorites in terms of the horror genre. But if you would talk about like maybe the process of writing that book, how long did it take? And then, you know, what are some of the benefits of, you know, kind of tagging on to something that's popular like that? Because to me, that's almost like, you know, timeless, you know, it's evergreen because people are always going to be talking about that movie for a long time to come. I'm sure they're probably going to make another 10 sequels of Scream, you know, for the next 20 years, we're going to see that. So you'll be just riding, your book's going to just be out there, you know, on Amazon, people are going to be talking about it.
Fingers crossed. Every time there's a sequel, I'll see
a, yeah, I'm sure you see a spike in sales every time something like that happens.
Well, the funny thing is actually, so we timed the release of it for August so that we could do like the initial push, and then with Halloween it's everywhere, and then in January the new movie comes out. Weirdly, like the week of this week for Halloween, like on Amazon, like the numbers have been going down, and I'm like, that would seem antithesis of what I would have thought. But going back to the process, it was actually super quick compared to what you hear most people go through. And I got really lucky. My publisher, Bear Manor Media, was the first publisher I reached out to. And Ben, he was on board with the idea of it. And he was like, let's do it. You know, this is a great idea.
So that was the first publisher you talked to. And they said, yeah, done.
Yeah, so I didn't go through the string of rejections.
Yeah.
So I've been super lucky. Mm-hmm. And honestly, even with everyone that I interviewed, they were very generous with their time. You know, I was on Zoom with them, some for multiple hours. They sent me photos and they were very responsive, like if I had to follow up with anything. So, I mean, I really I know my process was probably so much different from 95% of everyone else's. And with my next book, it'll probably be, you know, a lot different, but I got really lucky with this. And so I ended up signing the contract in June of last year, and I handed the manuscript in at the end of March. So it was really quick.
So why do you think, I'm curious, why do you think the publisher, do they say, they even tell you why? They're like, yeah, we'll take this. I mean, do they give you a reason? Like, cause it was, you know, something they think, this might work. You know, we don't see many books on horror or talking about Scream.
And that's actually the surprising thing. There hasn't been a book like this about Scream in 25 years, which I thought was surprising. I thought, because like Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th have been dissected every which way.
Yeah, right.
But for some reason, this hasn't. So I think the publisher is a company that specializes in entertainment-based books.
Oh, okay.
And I think... in my head, I like to think that I just wrote such a great book proposal.
Sure.
Yeah, I like to just tell myself that. But I think it was, he just saw that, you know, the timing and everything, it just, there was a need in the market. So,
what makes a book proposal? What does that involve? You basically, you're pitching your book to them. What does the proposal involve and how much time?
So basically it's like a 2-3 page, synopsis. You kind of do a market analysis. If there's anything that is out there and how it's different, you give, you know, the elevator pitch on it, mm-hmm. a little bit about yourself so that they know, cause they don't know you from Adam before that. So to pitch, you have to pitch yourself as much as the book so that they can trust you. And then I included a little bit about marketing. And actually my computer is about to shut down, so I'm going to jump back on my phone. I'll be right back. Sorry.
Okay. In the meantime, Sean, I might have to dump this beer, man. It is.
I'm pouring my second while you're dumping yours. So.
All right. So I'm going to take a pause. And I hate it because I spent like $8 on the single, but it is, my God. The rating is going down every time I take another sip. So I'm sorry. I'm going to have to revise my rating down to,
you got something else there in the office fridge.
It is a one. Yes, sir. I've got a Yingling.
Hey, you can't. Oh, a Hershey's.
Yingling. Hershey.
I like that.
So I'm going to
branding.
I'm going to rinse this out and go with a go-to here. Give me one second.